need to tell you about something. I want to tell you about the time I peed on my leg. Q1Go, the theater show. This is episode number 15.
What?
It is 15, and Tony is back with us live.
Yay.
And in person.
I feel like I've been gone forever and ever and ever.
I do, too. It's been sad.
I know.
Trying to figure out what to do. Now, we did the ghost episode in episode 14, so it's kind of like you were with us, but
not
we
really.
Went back in time.
It's fine.
But this episode is going to be all about stage stories.
Yes.
And I've been wanting to do this for a long time because
yes,
I just
have.
Love to talk about the stuff that's just happened and just have some fun and joke around.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with a list, and they just kept going and kept going. I had to stop, or it will be a three-hour episode.
Well, that's good, because I can't think of anything. And you told me to, and I said, well, I'll try to think of something, but nothing happened.
Oh.
But I think it'll happen like when you're normally talking to people, and you're like, oh, yeah, you made me think about this.
Right.
So I think that's probably what's going to happen.
I bet it will, because Kayla and I were in the car talking about different things that I was going to talk about. Well, you could talk about this and talk about that. And the more we would start talking about our stories in the car, the more I would think of something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I said the same thing. I said, I bet Tony, we start talking and she'll remember, ooh, this happened. Let me tell you about this. So, stage stories. Everybody who's ever done theater has a stage story, whether you can remember it or not. You've just got a lot on your mind right now, and you can't think of everything at once. So,
well, I mean, I can think of things that happen, but it's, I probably have stories. Like, I can think of things that happen and things like that, but they're not interesting to me. I mean, they're just, nobody would care about things.
Well, I don't think half of these are going to be interesting to anybody else. I'm hoping to be able to talk about it. So everybody who's ever done theater, though, I mean, if you could go back and watch it, you'd say, oh, I can talk about that. Oh, that was cool. That was funny. And I separated my list into things that are goofing off, then oops, not so funny. It's a small world. There's one little story there. Being the director, because we've both been on both sides of the coin, being a director and an actor. And then some cherished memories that I might get emotional when we talk about.
Oh,
so I hope it'll
okay.
make you cry if I start tearing up and go.
Okay. Yay.
So,
I like it. I'm looking forward to it.
Maybe not. I don't know. I get it. I get in professional radio mode, and maybe I won't get teary-eyed.
No.
Hopefully not.
Be real.
I'll be real.
Let's be real.
I'll be real. I'll just kind of, well, do like the end of The Crucible. We'll just be kind of.
Don't do that. Then I'll cry too.
Okay, so do you want me to start then and kind of get us going so maybe you can think of something? Or did you have something written down?
Well, I was just making notes, but no, I want to hear story time with Michael.
Story time with Michael. Okay. So just a quick refresher course on me as far as my theater career. You don't want to call it a career. It's all been voluntary, but I started doing theater when I was really young. So about seven, well, really five or six, I was doing some little cute little chickadee type things. But as I got seven, eight, nine, I started doing some big stage shows, starting with Oliver. Played one of Fagin's gang in Oliver. And so I've got a whole long list. There was a time in my life where I didn't do theater, but then when we started again, it was on like Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And Donkey Kong the musical.
Wouldn't
that be awesome?
That would be hilarious.
Wouldn't be anything but a big monkey throwing barrels on the stage.
No, you could have trampolines and doing flips off of them and stuff.
That'd be awesome.
Yes. Yes, it would.
I'm writing Donkey Kong the musical.
Anyway. And it has fun music on the games, too.
Yeah. Boop, 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 boop.
What? That's Mario.
Oh, that's right. This quickly went off on a rabbit trail. From stage stories to Nintendo. God help us in this episode. Okay, this is of my stories are going to come from, most of them are going to come from the later time. After me and I had met Kayla and we got into doing theater.
Okay.
The first one I'm going to tell you about is Into the Woods, and a friend of, well, we both know Kelly. I won't say her last name because she doesn't know I'm talking about her on this episode, but friend that we both know, Kelly, played my wife. She played the baker's wife. I played the baker. And
yeah.
She, if you ever, I'd love to have her on the show. She could really have some fun telling about the stupid stuff I've done. I love to make her laugh.
Yeah.
I love to make anybody laugh, especially if you're trying to be serious and I know you got to go out on stage. I want to test you. And
mm-hmm.
I shouldn't. That's the shame on me, but it's just, I can't help it.
Yeah.
When I get in the wings, I get goofy. We had a night maybe somebody listening to this can relate. You got a great show. Everything's going well. Everybody knows their part. But you just have that night where stuff starts going wrong.
Yeah.
You also have some of those nights where somebody starts laughing or something and it just derails. And then people get really goofy. And then they start doing stupid stuff on stage they really shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It can get away from you really quickly. And this was one of those nights. Kelly got delirious. And I think it might have been me that caused it because I said something to her in the wings. I made the mistake right before. If you're familiar with the way Into the Woods is done, at least on the stage, it started in freeze frame in Act 1 and Act 2. And the music starts and the narrator starts talking, but all the actors are right there on stage and they're frozen until the part of their narration comes on.
En tableau.
En tableau.
Yes.
Exactly. So we were sitting there, and right before we went on stage, right before we were to get started, I said to Kelly, straight-faced, I went up to her and said, Kelly, I need to talk to you. She said, what? What is it? I said, I need to tell you about something. She said, what? I want to tell you about the time I peed on my leg. And she did that. She went, what? And she was a little nervous, and I was trying to loosen her up a little bit. So the story goes that I told her was my wife was a big fan of the Oak Ridge Boys. Mm-hmm. Or was it the Statler? No, it was the Statler Brothers we were going to see. She's a big fan of them, grew up with listening to them with her parents and stuff. So they came to Athens, Georgia to a concert, and they had this lady singing first. She was opening for them, and she did like an hour. Mm-hmm. Show. And we had spent a good bit of money on box seats for this, because when I found out they were coming, I was going to treat my wife to this something special.
Yeah.
And so we got box seats, and everything was, you know, we were feeling nice and fancy and frou-frou. The lady sings, she was really nice, but they give us a 15-minute intermission as they got the stage ready for the Statler Brothers to come on. So everybody gathered in the bathroom. Everybody had to go to the bathroom, including me. Well, I went in a stall because the urinals were taken.
Mm-hmm.
Just went in the stall, shut it, and I'm standing there. Guys, you can relate to this. I'm standing there looking around, making sure I'm aiming good, but you know, once I'm there, I'm looking around and kind of la 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 la, and I feel a pressure on my leg. Somehow, some way, some force of nature was creating, like I was hitting an invisible force field. And it was bouncing.
Oh my Lord.
At an extreme angle back onto the leg high up on my thigh.
Oh,
of
God.
My pants. And I mean, we're
That's
talking
awful.
About like a 3-inch wide stream all the way down my leg. And I was wearing khakis. So we got this large urine stain going down my
no.
leg. And I'm like, no. So I had to wait till everybody else goes out of the bathroom. Then I had to go wash myself off and try to get as much of it off as I could. And then there were no paper towels. It was all air dry stuff. So I've got there with my leg. You've seen like the guys in the movie.
Yeah.
With their leg up at the hand dryer.
Yeah.
People looking at me weird. Still didn't get this big stream. And then I had to walk back to the box seats through everybody with that.
No.
And so, no lie, I sat down. I was mad. Kayla could tell. She said, what's wrong?
Said, well,
I'm pissed off. And I told her the story, and she just looked at me and said, sounds to me like you're pissed on.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, I mean, I set her up for that. So I said that whole story to tell you that I told Kelly that right before we were going on
mm-hmm.
in Tableau.
Mm-hmm.
And she started giggling, and she was... The more she thought about it, the more she laughed, and the more she laughed, the more she could not quit laughing.
Mm-hmm.
That started a whole chain reaction for that whole show.
Uh-oh.
There's a scene in Into the Woods where the baker and the baker's wife are trading beans. They've sold the cow for
mm-hmm.
beans.
Mm-hmm.
And the baker's wife, I think, asks for the bean. She's going to take the bean. Or the baker gives her the bean, and they're supposed to part ways. Well, she was just all weird and delirious and giddy, and I gave her the bean, and then in the middle of the fight, she slams it back into my hand.
Uh-oh.
The baker can't have the bean.
Yeah.
So I continued the fight and slammed it back in her hand. And then she slammed it back in my hand. And we went back and forth. And I'm the more we did this, the wider my eyes are getting. And this isn't rehearsal. This is an audience out here. And the wider my eyes are getting because I'm wanting to say, take the stupid bean and let's part ways. And then that got her laughing. And then it just went on and went on.
Why did she keep on doing it?
I don't know. She just did. And, you know Kelly. She just was getting silly and being funny, and it worked. And the audience thought it was funny. They were laughing, and the show's like that anyway. And then later on, it was her job to push Milky White onto stage when I start calling. I'm on stage by myself. Milky White, move, or whatever. And Milky White, at some point, comes on the stage, and her job was to push it. It was on rollers from the wings. She didn't push it slow. She shoved it, and here comes Milky White all the way across the stage, and I had to block this paper mache cow.
Oh, it's funny.
And it was just one of those shows where it's like, we had fun, and we were laughing, and we were trying. But I was so glad when it was over.
Oh, I bet.
And
that's like a minefield.
And then stupid me, the next night, I come up to her and say, Kelly, did I ever tell you about
what's
the time
wrong
I peed
with
on my
you?
Leg?
There is something wrong with your head.
There is something wrong. I don't know. It's just goofy like that. But firsthand about me doing stupid stuff like that. Was it during a performance or during a rehearsal when I came up to you and David Bennett?
I don't know.
Had the fake hair, but he looked like Ben Franklin, and y'all started talking about that.
Yeah.
So I came up and just said, Ben Franklin.
I think it was
syphilis.
A performance, but it was at intermission. So we had time, I think.
That tickled you.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was just a fact. I was just telling you.
I know,
you,
but
ben
it was
Franklin
just unexpected. We're in the middle of this dark drama, and everybody's sad. And then you come up and tell me that, and I'm like, what? What is this?
Well, he did. He had syphilis.
It was just so out of place. It shocked me and made me laugh.
So I've mentioned that to her all the time.
Yeah.
I think every time we're in the wings together, I got to come up and say that to her. It's a tradition. There was another thing in the Crucible where the leading man kept doing a different beard design every time he would come out at the end of the...
Oy, oy, oy. That was not fun.
It was to me.
It was not fun to me.
It was to me because
I had to keep a straight face.
I know.
Every time. And
I lost
didn't know
it when Pat Bale lost it.
Well, Pat is very easy to make him giggle on stage. It is very easy to make him lose his character. So don't mess with him if you're in a show with him because he will go off.
I can't remember if that one happened to be during a rehearsal. It seems like when Pat lost it, might have been one of the tech rehearsals.
Yeah, because that was the first time they were putting the beard on and they didn't know what they were doing.
Right. And they eventually got a consistency. But, one time it came out, the time that Pat started losing it, he looked like Abraham Lincoln.
He did. He sure did.
They all started laughing. I'm in the wings kind of getting my face on. I'm whatever role I was. I don't even remember right now.
You were Thomas.
I was
What is his name? Hale.
Yes.
Hale.
I was
Mr. Hale.
Mr. Reverend Hale. Reverend John Hale.
Oh, I thought it was Thomas.
No, it's Hale. It's John Hale. And so I'm sitting there in the wings, and all of a sudden I hear out on the stage as people start laughing. And then people, and it just works its way through the wings to me. And I'm like, what? And I looked out there. They didn't have to tell me you look like President Lincoln. He just did.
He did.
But Pat was just sitting there, red-faced.
That's what I was about to say. His face turns red. Red, red, red. So even if he's able to cover up the snickering, he's laughing.
I want to hear about a story, by the way. If you're listening to this, go to www.q1go.com and either call in on the number or give us an email. I want to hear your stories because I know everybody listening to this has been in that situation where somebody started giggling and you couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing happened with me with Pat on stage. And it was almost every single rehearsal for A Few Good Men. And I was playing the jerk, and Pat's character was coming in to say, no, these are the rules. We're going to follow these rules. And we were sitting side by side, and we just turned our face to each other so that we were in profile to the audience. And we were, really close, almost nose to nose. And I don't remember what my line was, but I said something to him and I was right in his face, like real hard. And he'd go, that's what he would do every time. And he wouldn't say his line. He would just freeze because he was trying not to laugh. And I was like, get it together. And he was not, almost every single time he would laugh at that part.
And it was something that was written, right?
Yeah, I wasn't saying anything crazy.
It was just,
I think it was just being just, that close.
Called him funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
That happened to us during appointment with death. And it, once it, I guess it probably happened the very first time the line was uttered during rehearsal. And normally in those situations, you get through it, you interrupt rehearsal, and the director gets a little irritated and goes, people, okay, let's get it together.
Mm-hmm.
But it never, ever went away from me. Every time he did it, and I'm about to tell you the story, I had a little thing I had to do to keep myself from losing it on stage because it was not a funny moment. The line was, your mother is dead.
Okay.
All right. Now imagine, this was Appointment with Death, Agatha Christie play, and it was right at the end of Act One.
Who's saying this?
Jack Fricks.
Okay.
So Jack Fricks has this fantastic, he's the one that needs to be hosting this podcast. I mean, he's got that voice.
He's got the voice like the Allstate man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's that very deep, rich, articulate voice. It's wonderful. I want to have him on the podcast just one day just to let him talk.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes up and he's playing the inspector, the investigator. And the woman is found dead and he goes up there and he has to come tell me. I was playing Lennox, who was her son. And he comes to me and he says, Lennox, your mother is dead. And it's so serious and so funny. I don't know why we all found it so funny, but we did.
Everybody did. Not
everybody did. We started. I think Jack did too.
Oh. Yeah,
because it just felt weird the way it was so soap opera melodramatic.
Why didn't he say it differently then? If that was
he was saying it the way he really should according to the script. It just was so, like I say, melodramatic soap opera.
Yeah.
You want to hear the organ go boom, 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 boom,
yeah,
right after he says that. And the look on his face, because the whole point is I can't laugh.
Mm.
This is serious. And he's looking at me and said it that way. And I have to look at him.
Yeah.
I had to look him in the eye and not laugh. And it was impossible.
Uh-huh.
I had to chew my cheeks, the insides of my cheeks, with both sides.
Oof.
So I would kind of, my face would get a lot thinner because I would kind of grab my cheeks with my teeth and just kind of look at him and
oh no.
And it happened throughout the entire show. I don't think the audience ever knew it, but
that's funny.
But it I hated that because I pride myself on being able to keep it together.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when people are trying to make me laugh.
Mm.
I can just keep on. I could not do that.
That is very funny.
The last story I personally have, and jump in at any time, because I'm just trying not to make you feel like you have to jump in or anything, but jump in any time you want to.
What do you mean? You said you had a whole page.
Well, I do. I got 15 of them, but I've already gone down like 5 of them. This will be 5. The last one was when I was a kid. We did Anderson Community Theater, and it was a kid's show called Peace Child. I don't know if you even ever heard of it.
You told me about it several times.
Did I? Okay. Kind of cute. Kill.
It's kill.
Kill shot. Okay. It was cool. I enjoyed that one.
This has nothing to do with it, but do you ever listen to Herman Cain on the radio?
I have listened to him. It's been a while since I've heard him.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with everything he says, but he's just fun to listen to. He's got a fun voice.
Yeah, he does.
And the way he says things makes me just laugh.
He's old school for one thing.
Yeah. And, today, I don't know. Oh, he was talking about the reforms with the healthcare and stuff that went through this last week. And he was like, I don't remember what his point was, but he was like, no, it's nothing. Nada. Nachos. And it just cracked me up. And he called it after he said it. He's like, no, wait a minute. Nachos.
Why am I saying nachos?
It was just hilarious, but that's what you made me think of.
Well, this story is about the pronunciation of a word.
Okay.
We're from the South. If you can't tell by now by listening to us, then you need to have your hearing checked, because we are Southern. This podcast comes to you from Georgia. So this was in South Carolina, though, and we were doing Peace Child, and the line I had, they were in Russia, and it was all before the Berlin Wall came down and all that, and it was the Cold War, and we were teaching the Russian children about democracy.
Oh, my.
Or something like that. And then everybody would break into song, Peace Child, da-da-da-da-da, whatever it was. I don't remember the music, but my line was, it's a pipe dream, Corrine. Unfortunately, I have an aunt, and her name is Corrine.
Uh-huh.
But all of the people in my family call her Corrine.
Corrine.
You probably heard that.
Yeah.
So I came in, and the first time I did that line, I said, it's a pipe dream, Corrine. The director said, stop! Stop! You're in Russia. I'm like, well, I'm not Russian.
Yeah.
But I've always remembered that. Now, whenever I see her, I think Corrine. I can't say Corrine anymore. It's Corrine. Corrine.
Did he want you to have an accent?
He wanted me just to be generic.
Okay.
You know, he didn't want me to be that Southern. We were all Southern, and the kids that were playing Russians had to kind of try to do a Russian accent, but I was American.
Okay.
And he just wanted me not to be so Southern.
Right.
He wanted me to say Corrine, not Corrine. Mm-hmm. So that was what that meant.
You know, accents are a funny thing, because even I've noticed a lot when you are working on a script or whatever, and somebody says a word the wrong way. When I say it in the wrong way, I mean wrong for whatever it is that you're doing. They might be fine in another setting, but in this one, I can't think of an example right now, but even if other people around you are still saying it the right way, mm-hmm. people will still say it the way they say it, unless you specifically say, don't say it that way. And it's weird. It's just really weird. You would think people would pick up on that kind of stuff.
I think a lot of it is just like with me saying so many times, it's just in your head, you can't get it out unless you're trying to, and then sometimes they don't try hard enough, I guess.
I guess people just don't hear it, like you said. I don't know.
I was watching some clips of me doing the rehearsals of The Mousetrap, and I had to be very British, mm-hmm. and I was very proud of myself for my accent, I thought. But I was watching some clips of that rehearsal, and I did not like the way I was doing it. I didn't think I sounded British enough. And Kate's like, you sound British. Your accent's great. And I'm like, I can hear the Southern in me come out in places that we're all really overly critical of ourselves. And I know I'm hearing things that nobody else heard. Mm-hmm. Nobody else heard. But I almost said that, too. But I don't know. You're right. Accents, it's funny, and people get really nervous when they find out they're going to have to do an accent.
Yes, they do. They flip out. I think it's a fun opportunity. I might not be the best at it, but I think it's fun.
It ups the ante of going into a different personality. Mm-hmm. That's why I like doing them so many times, so mm-hmm. much. When I'm on stage and somebody says, you get to do British or you get to do this, I'm like, yeesh. I'm so happy about that. I love it. Now, there have been a lot of times that things have happened that have not been not so funny.
Yeah.
And you were involved with the first one I'm going to talk about is my wife slamming her finger in the door during Noises Off.
Yeah, but I didn't know about it until afterwards.
It was nasty. Her finger turned black.
You didn't know about it until afterwards either.
No, I knew about it when she did it.
But, I mean, you didn't know what had happened. You just saw her jumping around.
No, I knew she had done something, but I didn't realize what she had done until after the scene was over.
Yeah.
What happens during Noises Off, if you see that show in Act 3, everybody's angry with everybody else, but they're trying to do a performance in front of an audience and stay into character. But then when they come off stage,
they're themselves.
They're themselves. And so it's this funny back and forth farcical thing. Well, there's a lot of doors. That's kind of a theme in there, is all the doors that are in this house, and they're slammed constantly in Act 3. And Kayla came during a performance with the audience out there. She came from backstage, on stage, being this funny character, and slammed the door and didn't get her hand out of the way. And she slammed the door hard on her finger.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept going.
Yeah.
Nobody knew. But then when she came off stage, and she was only off stage for like 10 seconds, she comes back off stage, eyes as big as saucers, because she can now react.
Yeah.
And is like, and we're, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? And you're right. Until it was over, I didn't know. And then she had to go back out on stage, get back into character, and then come back out. And she was able to show, and she had slammed it. Oh, it was, it turned black and blue.
Yeesh.
It was nasty.
That's no good.
But you had to adjust the way Trey fell down the stairs in that show as well.
Oh, yeah. Just nothing ever really worked the way we wanted it to with the stair thing.
Yeah. Well, didn't he get bruised up the first time he tried to do it on his back?
Mm-hmm.
It calls for this character to fall down the stairs. This was an awesome set. And it had this tall flight of steps over on the at stage right. And he had to fall down the stairs, and they had to practice it to get it right without breaking him or the set. And the first time he did it, Trey is one of these people who is just all out there 100%
right.
The first time. Mm-hmm. And so, let's do this thing. And he threw himself down the stairs, and he came back the next day with some bruises, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, we got to figure something else out.
Yeah.
And it was, so he did, didn't he ended up doing that little kind of slow slide or something like that?
It just ended up falling down the first part and then kind of like jumping off the bottom so that you didn't have to fall down the whole thing. But yeah, it's just never worked the way I wanted it to. Oh, well.
I mean, what do you do, though? I mean, falling down the stairs really requires a professional stuntman.
Yeah, so. When you have a big staircase like that, then, I mean, yeah, it's difficult to do.
Yeah. Kind of like stage combat.
Yeah.
You know, it's either going to look good or it's going to look real obvious.
Yeah.
So,
well, did you remember the other one from The Crucible? I was kind of waiting to see if you'd bring it up because I'm pretty sure you were on stage when this happened. I could be wrong. It might have been somebody else. But the little girl, Anna, when she fell asleep on stage.
I forgot about this one. I should have picked this one. Yeah, I'm glad
weren't
you brought
you
it up.
Weren't you out there?
I was on stage, yes.
Yeah. You tell.
No, you don't have me.
I wasn't there. I just was told about it.
Okay, so we're on stage, and this is in Act 1, toward the end. No, it's not toward the end of Act 1. It's toward the scene 1, toward the end of the first scene of Act 1, I should say. And Betty, I think is the name of the character, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. has gone into this sort of trance coma situation, they're thinking. And they think she's been cursed by the witches.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into the whole story of The Crucible. It's about Salem witch trials and all that type of stuff that was going on in the areas around there. And they brought in Reverend Hale, mm-hmm. and they brought in the other reverends from the town and all these people to try to figure out what's going on. And in the center of the stage is this small bed with the little girl asleep. And they're all talking about her. And then there's this girl from Haiti, Tituba, who's doing her crazy stuff. And we're all on stage, and all of a sudden, Betty is supposed to wake up when this chaos is going on, and everybody stops and realizes that Betty has woken.
And she stands up on the bed, right?
I think we had her sit up around. Anyway, I can't remember what she did, but she's supposed to be there. She's stock still, almost dead in this bed. The whole scene, she has to stay that way until this one cue, boom, hey, what's going on, everybody? And everybody goes running over to Betty.
So wasn't it the part where the girls started saying, well, so-and-so did this to me, so-and-so did this to me, and then she woke up and joined in?
Okay. That's right. The girl, the main antagonist.
Abigail
started all this stuff and laying some blame and stuff like that. Well, it started during the performance. Betty didn't wake up. Well, there's only so much you can do without it just going on and on like, well.
Yeah, because everybody's supposed to react, she's awake,
Yeah, and it's one of those places where it's hard to continue if the person doesn't do it, and you don't know what to do.
Uh-huh.
And so she didn't wake up, and so we continued kind of going on, what are you talking about, Abigail? What are you saying, Abigail? Still didn't wake up. David Bennett's character was over there, and he kind of sidles over to her, and I saw him out of the corner of my eye start kicking the bed. The girl fell asleep on stage.
Yeah.
Live on stage, she fell asleep, and poor thing, I felt for her because I think she's a little embarrassed, but that's probably happened before.
Oh, I'm that
because. I mean, you're tired after tech rehearsals. You're sleepy. A lot of times these open on a Friday night if your theater doesn't mind
breaking
the rules. And so if it's a kid, she may have been in school all day. She's tired.
Yeah.
I'll bet this has happened. And she fell asleep. This girl fell asleep, and they had to wake her up. And she did. I mean, when she did come up, I was like, ah!
I know. I was impressed with that. Yes. I was impressed that she jumped right up. Like, it wasn't like it took her a second to get her bearings. It was like right away she jumped up and started doing her lines. And yeah. I was like, whoa.
I don't think the audience knew a thing.
Yeah.
But everybody on stage did. And I just had this vision of David over there trying to nonchalantly kick the bed. Do something. Wake up!
Child. I could, if that was me, I could not go right into it. I'd be waking up going,
who that?
No, I mean, I'd be just kind of hanging out like I was in my bed at home, like looking around and going, what are y'all doing? What's going on? Oh! When I see the audience, that would, I couldn't do what she did. I was really impressed with that.
It was, yeah, I don't bring it up to her because I don't know how much she wants that brought up, but I was like you. I was impressed that she kind of had the professionalism to keep going.
And well, you know, another kid fell asleep on our stage that I know of. I don't know about all of them, but in Christmas Story, when the little boy was, Randy, the little boy, not, what's his name? Ralphie, not Ralphie, his little brother, the one that's always like, oh, yeah, right. That one. I don't remember what was happening, but somehow or another he had gotten into the crate that the leg lamp came in, and he was supposed to pop out of it. Well, he went to sleep in the crate, and he didn't pop out. And I don't remember, like, that one's fuzzy to me. I don't remember all the details, but all of a sudden you see that thing, the top pop off, and his little bitty self is, like, looking around like, oh, he's in a daze kind of. Like, I guess he'd finally woken up. I don't know, but that happened on our stage, too.
Well, I fell asleep on stage on our stage once.
Did you?
Yes, I did. It was also during Appointment with Death. The beginning scene, Lennox.
I like that name.
I like that name, too. And that was my only thing I really kind of liked about that. And I don't mean to insult Bob Paul was the director of that. He did a fine job, but that story was boring to me. Anyway, Lennox was my character. And the whole first act, or first scene of the first act, we're sitting there around a table in this diner we just come to. I think Paris is where we were supposed to have been. And we're from America, and we're sitting around this diner in the hotel. Sitting around this diner table in a hotel. Mm. And Lennox is, the character's supposed to be very kind of snotty and uninterested in anything that's going on. And so I'm reading a book, holding it up in front of me, in front of my face, for the entire conversation until someone says, Lennox. And then I don't answer, and they go, Lennox. And I'm supposed to kind of jolt, oh, what? What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Well, and I even had the book turned upside down to show that this is really me just being uninterested.
Right.
So I'm there, and we open the curtain, and everything starts. And I've had one of those nights, because I travel all the time. I had driven all night and had very little sleep. Holding that book upside down, and I nodded off and fell asleep during that scene. I mean, curtain open. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing Lennox, Lennox, and I'm what?
Well, that was the perfect time to fall asleep.
Perfect. I mean, it's probably the best acting I've ever done, and nobody knew it. I had the book in front of my face; you couldn't tell. I don't know. You know, it's a good thing I didn't drop the book. Have you ever fallen asleep and dropped something?
Yes.
It's a good thing it was nothing. Just. But, man, you want to talk about awake from that moment on, though. I was on it.
I bet so. But that is probably the best way to do it, when you're supposed to be ignoring somebody and they have to repeatedly get your attention.
I don't even think they knew I was asleep, because it the cue worked, you know, the timing was perfect.
Yeah.
But I knew it, and it was scary.
Oh, I bet it was.
There was a time when I was a kid in Annie Get Your Gun that Sitting Bull went out to have a drink and a smoke outside of the theater, and his cue came, and he just lost track of time.
Oh, no.
This is at the Anderson Community Theater. I was a kid, and I wasn't on stage, but there's a scene in there where Sitting Bull is supposed to come and greet the masses, and he comes out of the teepee, and they had the entrance to the teepee, you know, in the back of the set, and so he'd come and get in there and then come out of the teepee. He didn't come out on his cue, and they waited. And they waited because they announced him, Sitting Bull. Nothing. And so the guy playing it, he was this funny guy. He was this northern guy. He talked like this, you know. But he did howl, you know, when he came in and did it. But he talked like this. He was a funny guy. I loved him to death. But he would bring him a little flask.
Oh, and my cigarette. Goodness.
And he would go outside the backstage door. And so they called, and he didn't come. And they called, and they didn't come. And the only thing the cast could do was start. Somebody started going, "We want Sitting Bull."
Oh, my God.
And they started chanting that for like 30 seconds until he heard it. And
nobody was running to get him.
Well, the people, they couldn't find him. They didn't know where he was. He'd kind of gone off and done his thing.
Oh, Lord.
The director had a cow.
Oh, yeah.
At him. That's the first time I've ever seen a director go off on an actor, especially in a volunteer type situation. Mm-hmm. But he let him have it and would not allow him to go out and smoke anymore.
Yeah.
And
during the show, yeah.
It's common sense. It should be. Hear this. It's common sense. Don't during a performance leave the stage area. But it happened, and I've always remembered that. It scared me because, I mean, I've never seen a director that. I mean, he was red in the face. He was yelling and screaming when he came down there at the end of the show and just getting all up in that actor's face. And they had worked together so much. He knew he could do that.
Yeah.
That this guy wasn't going to stop.
He wouldn't storm off, yeah.
But that guy was on his P's and Q's that whole time for the rest of the time.
That's awful. Well, apparently we have a problem here that I didn't know about, but Zach Gerald was talking about it the other day, that whenever we have musicals that he's been involved with, when we come back from intermission, there's always somebody we can't find that we need to start the scene, whatever it is, in the musical. Because there's so many people to keep track of.
Right.
He said that every time he's been involved with one, there's always somebody they're looking for. They can't find them after intermission. Mm-hmm.
And we try hard. We have the stage manager is giving cues. 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, people, mm-hmm. they're giving cues, trying to make sure everybody's together. We're coming back. And everybody knows it's 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be a problem. But
it shouldn't
if it is,
be.
Now, I've never noticed it as a director.
Well,
I haven't either,
but that's what he was saying.
But he's done stage work, stage crew work, and he's also sometimes in charge of the sound,
mm-hmm.
and he's right on top of that stuff. So,
right.
Wow, I didn't know that.
We'll I didn't either.
Keep that in mind.
I don't understand why people think they could just do whatever anyway. That makes no sense. I don't get it.
It has to do with, you got two type of people who do this work in a volunteer basis, at least. You got people who love it so much they're willing to give their time for free because they just love it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're serious and they understand stagecraft and they take it seriously. Then you've got people who just want something fun to do. And their mindset, we've talked about this before in the personalities, their mindset is, I'm volunteering to do this. They're not paying me.
I don't get it.
I don't either. But we're the people who love it so much that we're sitting here talking about it on a podcast. So we put a lot of time and effort into this stuff just to talk about it. So we get it. You'll never find me. I'm always going to be right close by. In fact, I'm usually jumping one on the stage behind the curtain waiting for it to open for act two.
Mm-hmm.
I had to threaten to take a director outside one time.
You were an actor?
Yep.
And then what happened?
He cursed my wife.
Oh.
I can't remember. I know he used the famous, fabulous four-letter F word with her, which I thought was not appropriate. And he was this young boy. He was like 18 years old. Yeah, I don't even know if he was 18. He was like 16 or 17, given his first chance. We were doing a Broadway review. It was one of the first... It was the second time I think we had done this review. They did it one summer. It was a hit. So they called everybody back to do the same type of thing with new music the next summer,
mm-hmm.
a part two.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked me and Kayla to come and do some stuff. And he just got his panties in a bunch one afternoon or one evening. And I don't even remember why, but I mean, for no reason, because you've worked with Kayla. She's not hard to work with. And he just and went off on her and started cursing. And I think he called her a bee. And I think that's what, and I didn't hear it, but several people did. And they all told me the same story. So I knew it was right. So he was standing up in the balcony. I walked up there calmly, and he knew what was coming because he knew once he had done it that was not good. And I walked up in the balcony and just kind of did the thing where he was standing there looking over it and not looking at me. So I stepped beside him and leaned over just in his same posture and said, "We need to talk." And he said, "Yeah, sorry about that. And I told him, I'm not the one you need to apologize to. I said, you know, you're in charge of this show. We understand that. And if you need to get strict, we understand that too. But this is not called for to talk to any lady, especially, you know, I could talk to my wife like that.
And yeah. I said, need to call names.
Yeah. I said, that's not appropriate and I won't, you know, put up with it. And I did tell him, I'm not a violent person at all. I said, but this will be the one and only time I let it slip. And he said, I understand. And he walked down and apologized to her. That got real fast.
Mm.
I said, real, three times in a row, and it made sense.
Are you proud of that?
I'm very proud of that. real fast. It's pretty awesome. And then the not-so-funny moment that I remember from my personal show is the time the airbrush clogged during Mr.
Oh,
Long.
Yeah, that was a panic.
And I wasn't going to mention this, but I'm mentioning it because I think I may see if I can't put the video of this happening on our Facebook page. I mean, not our Facebook page, on our website. I wrote, Mr. Long Said Nothing, and Tony was a big reason that that show actually saw a full run. And it involves some stage makeup. I won't tell you about it here, but I'll let you see it if I get it on the website. Go to the website and see what we're talking about. But we had to do a real quick change with some stage makeup involving an airbrush and turning a person into a statue really fast. And it went really well during tech rehearsals and all the way through the first six shows. On show number 7, the very final show, I was in charge of mixing the paint. And I mixed it just a hair too thick. And the airbrush clogged.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't any other way to make this transition. I mean, it had to be done with an airbrush. So I had to go down there, thin out the paint, do all this stuff. And we had a 5-minute stretch to take a person who had just been one character on stage and completely turn them into a gray statue. And it worked. But it was kind of a tense moment for me.
Yeah, it was freaking everybody out.
If you're interested in seeing that, I'm going to try to put the video on our website. If I can't put it straight on the website, I'll put it on YouTube and then put a link to the YouTube on our website on the show notes. So
check the YouTube.
Check the YouTube.
I don't know. I didn't know that you had that on video. I thought you just had the process of how you did it on video.
This was during the performance. It shows David come off stage doing his you know, they had the offstage dialogue and he was changing into the statue costume during the dialogue.
Right.
So Amanda filmed it. I asked them to film the process one time.
Yeah. It just happened to be that night.
It happened to be that time. So it shows him standing there at the microphone in the wings and Tracy with him and they're doing all their dialogue and Tracy's helping him get dressed and get in the other costume. And then he runs downstairs and he gets ready where my sister, who was his makeup artist, is waiting with the airbrush poised and he comes and it won't come. It won't come out. And they're like, what? So I had to run and thin it. And then they had to get him airbrushed and then him run up the other side and get cooled off in the fan, which had to be a little quicker because he usually had a little more time to do that than get up on the podium. Ooh. It's a really neat thing to watch. It's if you like to see kind of backstage stuff and how things go and how crazy things can get during a performance, that's a good one to do. So I'll put a link on that to that in the show notes. Just look at just go to Q1Go.com, look into the show notes, and it'll be this latest episode, 15 Stage Stories.
That's a lot of craziness happening at one time.
Absolutely. That was.
I think I might flip out if I was David.
He was really good. He kept his calm and he said, what's going on? I said, airbrush clogged. So I ran down there, mixed up the stuff and it was okay. I'm probably making it sound like worse than it was, but my heart was beating.
Yeah.
At that point, because everything in the show's pivotal on that moment when the curtain opens back up and he's back on stage as a statue is. That's pinnacle this in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has to be right.
Well, I don't know. I don't believe I could handle it. Because, I mean, I'll just miss, like, a sound cue or something, and my heart is pounding like I'm going to die. So I don't think something that important I'd fall out dead. That's what would happen. I think I'm too high strung anyway to do that.
Stephanie's my sister and she watched the progression of that show from the time it was in, you know, she heard me talking about it for 20 years and she watched the development. She just was excited to be able to get to be a part of that.
Right.
And they got it done And yeah. and it's cool because in that video, you can see him get stuck up on the podium. And I mean, like 5 seconds later, the curtain opens.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's how tight they made it. Yeah, go. I'll do that. We've got a couple of weeks before this is released. As this is recorded, it will be on the show notes. When you hear this, go to the show notes and watch that. I'd like to hear your reaction to it as well. Now, one cool thing, I mentioned Annie Get Your Gun a couple of times. When I did that in Anderson, I was a little boy, 8, 9, 10 maybe, and there were these two little girls who were twins, and they started hanging out with me and my cousin. We were both in the show. He played Jake, I think was the name of the kid that's in that, and he played the lead kid in that. I was boy jumping rope.
Mm-hmm.
I rocked that rope. I think I said that before. They're the ones, I've got a picture of these two little girls on each side of the rope, twins. Twin doing the rope. And Kayla, it turns out, went to school with these girls. So my future wife was friends with these girls all growing up in high school.
That's funny.
And that's cool. So I recently saw them at their family does a big corn maze every year in
fun.
October. It's a really cool place to go. Really fun.
Well, I was not happy about this stage story. It made me very agitated. Well, two times, but this one in particular, we were doing The Man Who Came to Dinner, and there is a scene where the crazy zany guy comes in and he's talking to the main character, which is based off of a radio personality, mm-hmm. actually. And, you know, Sheridan Whiteside, the radio guy, he's very, he likes to make jokes, but he likes to make jokes at other people's expense. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't like to, he's not like, ha ha, funny, laugh, laugh. He's just very dry, snide comment guy. Mm-hmm. Well, the other guy that comes in is the opposite. He's like, you know, Groucho Marx, bouncing around, but he talks. So he comes in and it's the scene with those two. And I don't even remember what they say in the scene. I don't remember any of the dialogue, but these two are supposed to have their scene. The one was supposed to go all around the room with his crazy physical antics and that kind of stuff. And the other one was supposed to pretty much stay put. Well, I don't know why, but somehow they decided they were going to have a pillow fight in the middle of the show. And they started running around the couch with the pillows, hitting each other and laughing and stuff like that.
This was not blocked.
No. And Tony was not happy in the booth.
I've seen your not happy face.
And I was so mad because I was like, how are they going to get back from this?
Yeah.
Because I honestly, now I don't remember where it went from there, but I was going, there's no connection. There's no anything they can do. I mean, they were kind of razzing each other, joking. That was where it was, the conversation was. So it fit in that way. But whatever had to happen next was... I think I've blocked it from memory. I don't know what they did to get back to the next part, but that happened during the show one time. And I hope it was the last show because I was not happy about it. I really don't remember. I think I really did block it out.
Did you say they did that twice?
No, they did it one show.
Because when you started, you said it, well, it happened two times.
Oh, well, talking about me not being happy about something.
What was the other one that happened?
The other one was the 39 Steps, and I know that had to be... I don't know if that was the last performance, but anyway, there was a part where the curtain opens and it's supposed to be this one long guy sitting in a chair, and that's how the show starts. It's the very beginning of mm-hmm. the show. And he is supposed to give a little monologue there to set up the scene about where we are, what year it is, what's going on, so the audience knows, you know, this is not 2012, this is 1939 or whatever. So he is supposed to be there. We hear that. And then we go on into the comedy. It's like that sets up the whole part, the whole show. And he has a little, you know, humor in his monologue there, but it's not like, hey, joke time. Right. Well, one night they opened the curtain and one of the clowns, the guys that change characters rapidly throughout the show, was in the chair instead of the guy that was supposed to be in the chair.
Okay, I remember this now.
Yeah. And so he was sitting there and I was doing the sound for the show and I was like, And I went ahead and turned his microphone on because he was there. People were expecting him to talk. And so he started doing the monologue that the original guy was supposed to do. And then the original guy comes on stage and is like nudges him on the shoulder and kind of does his thumb over his shoulder like, get out. This is my part. kind of thing. And so he left off. And it wasn't a big deal, but I was mad about it because it, like I said, it set up the whole show right. And now it's ruined.
Right.
Because you can't go back and do it. You can't take that away. You can't fix it. And it wasn't like the whole performance was awful from that point on, but that's not how it was supposed to be.
Right.
And so I was mad about it.
I know the feeling.
And so Lynn was my, I think I've told this story already on this podcast, but Lynn was my lighting director or my lighting technician. And I looked over at her and I was like, I was making the angry face. And she called back to the people that were in the stage on the stage. And I said something like, I don't like that. I had to be quiet, obviously, because there were people there. But I said something to that effect. And I heard her call them. And she said, Tony said there will be no more shenanigans backstage. That's what she said. And so that kind of broke my anger and made me go, you know. But, oh, I was so mad. Both of those instances, I was so mad.
Well, that same show, you talk about that on a podcast. You did, because it was the episode of My Everything Art, or the Everything Arts podcast.
Oh, was it that one?
It was
okay.
On that one. So let's mention this. Tell the story then about the same production of, which production is this?
We were talking about 39
Steps. The 39 Steps. I kept wanting to say Wrong Window. That's the one that's going on now. The 39 Steps. Tell a story that we told in that podcast.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The one about Trey coming over the microphone during the last rehearsal. Because that's so funny.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So in 39 Steps, like I mentioned, there are two guys that they're just known as the clowns because they play too many characters to list all their names. They're flipping from one character to another, and they change outfits, and they change wigs and hats and everything. They don't just, you know, change from their voice and then they're somebody else. They change their out the whole bit. And there was one part where the guy had to get out of a kilt and back into some pants. It wasn't a full tuxedo, but they had like the vest and the bow tie and, you know, look nice. And he was coming out of a kilt get up. Well, that should have been easy. Put your pants on under the kilt, take kilt off, go, you know. But apparently somebody had messed with where he had left his pants. And this was during a dress rehearsal, thank goodness. It wasn't when an audience was out there.
But there were people test audience.
Yeah, we had people there to do that, but I was glad it wasn't a performance. But somebody had picked up the pants and moved them in their black pants in this black backstage, and he couldn't find them anywhere. And the scene change between the two was just taking forever. And I was sitting in the booth going, what is going on? And Trey, that you mentioned, had his mic on because he was the first one to walk out in the next scene. And so it was waiting for him to just come out and start talking. Well, he had his mic on and he went. And by the way, the whole theater is dark when we hear this. We're waiting for his cue so we can bring the lights up and all that good stuff. Well, he comes on the mic and he says, guys, Gunner can't find his pants. And everybody just cracked up. Of course, Gunner was not cracking up. He was frantic trying to find his pants. But it was funny, but I'm so glad it did not happen in the performances. He made it very clear, don't touch my pants. They are where they're supposed to be, even if they're on the floor.
I've never had a thing like that. I've always had the dream where I can't find my pants. You know, I have that dream all the time. I've got to go out on stage and I don't have my costume or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always my pants. Sometimes it's my pants, but most of the time, the other night I had a very similar dream. Kayla had been doing, okay, this is odd. I think because I've been speaking with somebody in Virginia, we mentioned her on the show before, Jessie Scott, who's going to come on with us eventually. And we're going to do an interview and we're going to talk Shakespeare and some stage stories and stuff. She's got an education in theater and we're going to talk to her. And I had been talking to her on Facebook, kind of getting some stuff together. And I think that's why I dreamed this, because the next night I dreamed Kayla was doing a Shakespeare play that was all about Oliver as a teenager. Or an adult.
Hmm.
Not a teenager, just like a young adult, which is already odd. And then, so I'm in the audience, and they're about to open the show open the curtain for the first performance, and I'm excited. I'm going to get to watch my wife do this show, which, again, probably has something to do with, for the first time in a long time, Kayla's doing a show I'm not in with Nonsense coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody taps me on the shoulder and says, "Why aren't you in costume?" And I'm like, "What? You're Oliver."
Oh, no.
I was supposed to be the adult Oliver in the Shakespeare performance of Oliver as an adult and nobody told me.
So
I had to go on stage in my dream and ad lib.
Ooh.
Just kind of have people talk to me in my dream it sounded Shakespearean. I have no idea what actually came out. I wish I had a recording of my dream to find out exactly what was actually said, but they would just say the stuff and I knew basically the story and it was like, okay, you know, and then I went to something else, you know, later. It just jumped to some other type of dream, but I thought that was the oddest one I've had in a long, long time.
You just made me think about it. I must block out details of things I don't like because I don't know the details of this one either.
Defense mechanism.
I guess it is. Makes me a happier person that way. I was doing sound, or at least helping with sound or something, for a show. And I got sent backstage during the show while it was going on because somebody had a mic problem. And I don't know what I was instructed to do. I just remember I was back there messing with the mic and somehow it was live, even though the person was off stage. And I was changing the channels for the microphone and it ran over other people's channels and it was like, and I was like, oh. I just turned it off real fast because I knew it was me right away.
Yeah.
And I went, oh my God. Sorry. I was looking at the actor and her eyes were a plate. They were so big.
And
I was like,
during a performance.
Yeah. And I went, that was me. And so I just turned it off. I don't remember what I did after that or anything. I just remember that point. I was like, oh my goodness.
I hate it when we're doing the mic checks before performance. During text, it's fine, but you're checking the mics before performance and everybody's making sure they've got enough battery power to get you through the show.
Yeah.
And you've got two bars and somebody says, that'll get you through.
Oh, no.
That freaks me out. I'm like, no. Fresh batteries. Give me fresh batteries because I have some sort of electromagnetic crap that goes on anyway.
You do. There's something
wrong with
you. I don't know
what it is.
Again.
Well, I shorted one out when me and Kayla were doing I Do. I shorted one out by sweating into the microphone pack.
Mm-hmm.
I did not even think about that. I didn't use one of those little belts that we put on.
Mm-hmm.
I just taped it straight to my bare back.
Oh, no. That's not good.
And it shorted out about halfway through Act Two.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to stop, and they had to bring me another. Couldn't figure it out. And when they opened it up, my sweat was down in the battery compartment. And, I mean, it was just all wet.
Whoa.
It was gross. That's gross. But, I mean, that was one of those shows. That's a good transition to Cherished Memories. Actually, I'll tell you about that in a second, being the director. I want to tell you about being the director because I mentioned it earlier. But Kayla and I did a show called I Do, and it's just a man and one man, one woman on stage the entire time. All the music, all the dialogue, those two people. And that was fun. I'm not crazy about the show, but it was still a really cool memory. But let me jump right quick to being the director, because that's what you've been talking about in situations where you were directing the show and times where it had you had to get real with them.
Yeah.
When we're doing this volunteer theater, so many of these people are close, dear friends. And we get together at houses and play games. We got a game night coming up here pretty soon between a bunch of our theater, what I call inner circle. But we direct or be directed by these people. We kind of all intertwine and do these shows like this, and it's hard to put on that director outfit sometimes when you have to kind of say,
yeah, when you have to be the negative Nancy in the room,
fun. Normally it's not that bad. Most of the time your friends will respect you and they understand.
Yeah.
And most of our friends have directed as well, so they know.
But you still don't want to do it.
No. We were doing Joseph. I think it was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in Hartwell, and they knew, the cast knew, don't go up in the balcony. So we were doing Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and two of my very good friends, well, one of them's a really good friend, the other one was a good friend at the time, I don't ever talk to the other girl now, but they knew you were not supposed to go up into the balcony. That was a rule, because we had a lot of people. You've been to the Hartwell Theater, you know how small a space that is.
Yeah.
We had 40 people in that cast.
Wow.
On that small stage, and a lot of them were teens and young children. I had to set some ground rules, and one of them was do not go in the balcony. We just can't keep up with you. I need you in the seats if you're not on the stage. Mm-hmm. In the seats. Don't go downstairs. Don't go in the balcony. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to see you and have you accountable.
Sidebar, why do people think balconies are so interesting, really?
I have no clue. But kids really love them.
I know, and I don't get it.
It's a different point of view. They can get up there. They're high up and looking down. And, you know, kids love to go where they feel like they're not supposed to because it makes them feel big. Well, these weren't kids. These were teenagers. These were people not too much younger than me. And they were good friends. But because they were good friends, they figured they could goof off. And I had let it slide more than I should. But it was getting kind of irritating. Kayla and I had had a conversation before this particular rehearsal. And Kayla and I had had a conversation before this particular rehearsal. I just forgot to breathe. I'm sorry.
It happened.
About we're going to have to say something to them because they're kind of starting to disrupt rehearsal. Well, that night, they go up into the balcony. We didn't know they had gone up there. And they'd taken a bunch of balled paper. And we're getting down to the nitty gritty. There's choreography that's we're behind on. There's music they're still not getting. There's set pieces that still have to be done. You know the process.
Yep.
And it was time to get real with this and get this down. So we're sitting here doing a choreographed bit and trying to do it and teach everybody and be serious. And all of a sudden, paper starts raining down on the stage. One by one, they and then duck. And I was like, all right, whoever's up there, come down. Well, we started doing it again, started throwing paper on the stage at people. And after the third time, Kayla saw who it was, and she called them by name and said, look, you're adults. Quit acting like children. Come down. They got mad and walked out. They said, fine, we're gone. And they walked out the door. The very next night, Kayla came to me and said, they're coming up the sidewalk. So I met them at the door and said, what are you doing? They said, coming to rehearsal. I said, what are you wanting to rehearse? They said, Joseph. I said, you're not in the show.
Wow.
And these were friends of mine. And they both act like they want to tear up.
Yeah.
And
your insides immediately want to go, oh, no, I didn't mean it.
Yeah,
but you got
to. But I had to, and I was red-faced. And, you know, I don't like this. That's not the type of person I like to be. So I was probably getting a little teary, too, because I can do that when I get really mad.
Yeah.
But I had. That angered me when they walked out.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it was rude.
It was rude. And Kayla had said quit acting like children, but they were doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and they were supposed to set an example for the kids, and they were not doing that. So when they came in and said, we're here for rehearsal, I said, you're not in the show. You walked out. I said, you walk out on me, that tells me you're quitting.
Yeah.
And you don't come back.
That's what it means.
And they said, oh, well, we just, and so I took them downstairs. I said, well, come with me. And we went downstairs, and for about 10 or 15 minutes, I sat them down and I laid down the law. And I said, first of all, you got to go apologize to my wife. I said, she's stressing out on this. She's the second half of this directing team. And it really hurt her feelings when y'all walked out like that. And, you know, so you got to apologize to them. Then you got to apologize to the cast.
Yeah.
I said, because that affects the cast. Y'all have parts we're having to fill. And we had to rearrange some stuff last night when y'all walked out. So they were okay. And, you know, and we all hugged it out. But that's the part you don't like about having to do it, being a director. But sometimes you got to.
I know. And it's awful. It's never fun.
So we've got a lot on this podcast so far. And I do want to get to the cherished memories right quick.
Okay.
Because one of the main things when people talk to me about I'd like to get involved with the theater, or when people ask me why I do this, because I'm not getting paid. I'm not a paid actor. I'm not a professional. But why do you spend so much time and effort doing this?
Mm-hmm.
You get nothing out of it, they think.
Yeah.
They've told me that. I'm sure they told you. What are you getting out of it? Well, this is what I'm getting out of it. Cherished memories. Things that nobody can ever take away and you can never, ever buy. One of the first ones that I want to talk about is what I mentioned earlier, sharing the stage with Kayla as the only two people in the cast. That's why I like I Do. I don't care for the show that much, but that was really cool, getting to perform an entire production with just me and her.
Yeah.
It also didn't hurt that we had all the rehearsal time in the world. We knew our stuff because we'd go home and run scenes. That's a show that takes place from the day a couple is married through 50 years of marriage. Really cool show. I like the concept. It's just one of those really old shows that I'm not really crazy about the way they did the music, if you get my point. So that's a memory I'll always have. Probably never want to do that show again, but...
But it's special to you.
It's special to me that me and Kayla got to do that. Because Kayla and I, a lot of times, will be in the same show, but we don't get to really interact as much as we'd like to. Mm-hmm. So we got to play opposite each other on that. The one, and I don't feel like I'm going to get emotional with this. I did kind of a little bit as I was typing this out. But my very first main stage show when I was a kid was Oliver. And I got a chance. I've told the story in the first couple of episodes of this podcast. How I wanted to be Oliver. We auditioned me to be Oliver, but I just wouldn't speak loud enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that stage was not microphoned, so I just wouldn't project enough. And I ended up having to be in Fagin's Gang. Well, we did the show here at the Elbert Theater. My son auditioned, not wanting to play Oliver, wanting to be a member of Fagin's Gang, and ended up getting cast as Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing with that is... He did a fantastic job of that, and it was already emotional getting to watch my son do that in his very first main stage show.
Mm-hmm.
Is the same one that was my very first main stage show.
Yeah, that's really cool.
But then they cast me as Fagin, mm-hmm. which was really cool to be able to be on the stage playing Fagin to his Oliver, to get to do these scenes with my son in his very first show. That's a memory and a cherished memory I will cherish for the rest of my life. I watched some scenes from some rehearsals of that the other day, and I was a blubbering idiot.
Oh.
Noah walks and says, "Daddy, what's wrong?" And you notice what's on. He's like, "Oh,
you're singing Where Is Love, and you're sitting on a casket, and you're so cute in your head."
Crap, I sucked as Fagin. Yeah, I started, and he's like, "Dad, stop it, quit doing it." I directed my mother at one point in Joseph, mm-hmm. and that was a good cherished memory for me because my mother is the one who created in me the love for musicals and all that stuff. So she was a minor character, but Jacob's wife the first time we did Joseph, and that was really neat getting to direct my mother. And I thought it was going to be an issue because, you know, you feel like your mother's going to go, "I'm not doing that. You can't make me do that." Although my mother is not Yiddish.
I love it.
But she did everything I asked her to do without complaint and enjoyed it.
This is funny.
Building and painting sets with my sister. My sister has built and painted sets with me, although a good bit of that will be over now that I'm not going to do any more building sets, but I will have something to do with some of the artwork.
Yeah.
And my sister always joins me with that, and that's special. I love to have her do that, and she loves to do that. And then getting to direct and see my first play take form. And I want to thank you for that, Tony. I've told you that a million times. I thanked you. But Tony's the one that called and said, "Would you like to do a public reading for Mr. Long?" And we did. And Tony's the one that called and said, "We've got this space open in 2013. Would you like to do the show?" And there's so many playwrights who are much better than me who have plays sitting on a shelf that never get performed because it's just so hard to find a place that is willing to or can fit it in. So that was... To actually see something that had been in my head for 20 years and then come to fruition and see all of my favorite people be involved and be able to direct that and see that was just tops. It was just fantastic.
Yeah.
So, cherished memories. That's what I got. I've got a whole lot more. I could keep going and keep going, but we're already over an hour.
I think that makes a good... Something. Yeah.
I want to ask someone to call in the number. Who out there has the guts to call us up on our phone line and give us a stage story or anything you want to talk about, a comment or response to something we've said? The number is 706-389-0401, 706-389-0401, and we want to hear from you. We want to hear your voice. We want to connect with you. Me and Tony are real people, and we...
We love you so much.
And it's fun to hear yourself when you, I don't know how to describe it, but it's kind of like hearing yourself on the radio. It's like, hey, it was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you've ever called into the radio, then like a few seconds later, you hear yourself.
Right.
Like, you know, that's fun.
And you don't even have to worry about being that person who is calling into a live radio show and then listening to themselves and then getting confused and the announcer says, "Turn your radio down."
Yeah.
So we'll do that. Give us a call. That number one more time, 706-389-0401. Whatever you got on your mind. But I know people who are listening to this, I have noticed that our downloads are increasing little by little as we release more and more episodes.
New
and so
and
I know new and new. I know that listeners are coming along little by little. And so you are probably theater people. I know you've got theater stories and we want to hear them.
Yeah.
So what are your final thoughts, Tony?
Well, I was just thinking about the time I called in the radio station this past Christmas, and I thought it was so funny. It was fun to hear because the announcers were talking about their topic was misheard song lyrics, you know?
Yeah.
How people sing the wrong words to songs and stuff like that. And they would say, like, so tell us some of your favorite, blah, blah, blah. And so I called in and did it. And I did the one, the Elton John song, Tiny Dancer. When everybody says Tony Danza.
Tony Danza.
And I sung it so hard, too.
Oh, did you? And you have a recording of that?
Well, I don't have a recording, but they played it back on it. And I was like, that's hilarious. That was so fun.
That's awesome. I love
but
it.
That's what you made me think
Hold
of.
Hold me closer, Tony Danza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were like, that's a great one. And I was like, I know.
I said that really soft. I sound like that Oriental girl from Pitch Perfect. Have you seen those yet?
No.
Okay. You need to.
I know. Everybody tells me that.
You really need to. I didn't think I would care. When people were telling me the same thing, you need to watch Pitch Perfect. You'll love it. I'm thinking Bring It On, that type of thing. You know, it's just kind of more for teenage girl type things. And I always saw groups of teenage girls going to see it. And I'm like, you know, I'm sure it's cool, but I'm really not interested.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody told me, and I saw a preview from the second one. So we went and rented the first one. Remember, I called you and asked if you had it.
Yeah.
We rented the first one and fell in love. I went right out and bought the soundtrack. Then we went to the movies to see the second one, and it's funny, too. I didn't like it as good as the first one, but I liked it. I said all that to say there's a little Oriental girl. She's a comedian, but everybody's sitting here talking, and then she comes in and she talks like this, and the whole thing is that she's very soft until she starts singing. But she's so funny. She's my favorite whole part of the thing is the I don't know if she's Chinese, Japanese, Korean. I'm not trying to be insensitive. I just don't know what her nationality is.
I don't know where she's from.
I don't know where she's from. You ain't from around here, here's you. So that's our podcast. Give us a call on that line. C1GFeedback@gmail.com is how you can get in touch with us if you want to drop us a line via email and share us on Facebook. Go like us on Facebook. You can find us there when you search. Go to iTunes and all that jazz. We're there. We're trying to get bigger. Share us. Spread the love, the C1G love. I'm going to make a t-shirt that says C1G love.
Yeah, baby. C1G love.
That's fun. I still want a t-shirt. I can't afford one.
I know. I'm working on it. I'm working to find a place that we can do t-shirts.
I'm just
going to
paint one for myself.
Cheap. Yeah, you can make them. And I don't have a problem with that. I'm going to go ahead and say this, by the way. We have a printable C1G logo on the website. If you think, I really would like to have a C1G feedback. No, I'm getting ahead of myself. You can tell I'm like Pavlov's dog. I start saying in C1G feedback. I want a C1G shirt, but I really don't want to pay the cafe press price. That's fine. I'm giving you permission on this podcast to take that logo, print it out, and put it on a black shirt if you want to. Or a white shirt. Do it. You can do it. Make you one if you want to. Spread the love.
Spread the love.
That's it. I guess I could keep going, Tony, so I'm going to say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.